you, the Progressive Radio Network.
And thank you so much for joining us today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, and as always, we're wishing you the best. And it's an interesting time because we're sort of doing more of life virtually right now, which is interesting because we have been giving both online and, of course, on-ground classes for many, many years. So what we did was we just expanded our online offering and made it even easier for people to participate. So coming right up, we have so many classes. All you need to do is go to naturalnurse.com on the web and go to calendar. We have links to how to sign up. We have a free webinar today, actually, which is a medical webinar, and it's on cardiovascular health, risk factor assessment, and reduction. But, of course, we go forward into functional medicine, and we talk about 17 different arterial markers that you should know, like what is your EPA, DHA level, and many overlooked by conventional medicine, such as the difference between the standard range and the optimum reference range for cardiac risk factors, and differentiating once you find out you have high cholesterol, but what is your APOA to APOB ratio? We'll be talking about all that in depth, and you can just go to naturalnurse.com calendar to sign up for cardiac risk. Now, our next class will be called Hildegard of the Gens, Mystic, Psychic, Visionary, Herbalist, Weaving the Tapestry of Healing from the Cosmic Elements. And that class has CE credits. In fact, all our classes have CE credits for nurses, massage therapists, acupuncturists, nutritionists. And we take many, many people through incorporating natural into their profession. So we have a class called Career Paths in Natural Health that we give very privately to individuals or as a group class. And then we have another Natural Nurse Herbal Certification Class 4 coming up called Feeling the Consciousness of Plants. So all of those are available as well as private consultations about what you can do to use natural remedies for yourself and your family. And all of that's going on at naturalnurse.com, where you can also sign up for a free newsletter just by going to the front left-hand corner and just put in your email. And today we have as our guest Suzanne Worthley. She's the author of An Energy Healer's Book of Dying. And we're going to talk to Suzanne. She is a quantum energy healing practitioner. And she provides several kinds of services, including personal healings, space healings, spirit work, crossing over, clearing, and vigil death and dying work. And she is a full-time practitioner, presenter, and instructor, as well as being a mentor. And she includes energy-based presentations through her own series called Community Education and College Course Instruction. Suzanne is certified in various healing modalities and trained in intuitive and psychic practices. She's also certified in hospice and death vigil, and we'll talk about that, and also about her book, An Energy Healer's Book of Dying, which is published by Findhorn Press and Inner Traditions. Thank you so much for joining us today, Suzanne.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate your time.
Now, we're going to go deeply into your topic, and let's go way back in time into your childhood and tell me what was the history of your development back then?
You mean in regards to energy and psychicness?
Well, or just your path in life.
Okay. Well, mine is kind of, I think, an oddity right out of the gate because of the fact that I'm a daughter of a mortician. And I kind of start the book out that way because, again, the story sort of starts out that way. You know, I had five siblings, so there were six of us. And my dad's so-called normal job was a mortician. And so for me, growing up around death and dying and running around a funeral home was all kind of like, I thought everybody had those experiences. I didn't really understand that I was kind of an oddity until I sort of got into maybe the latter part of grade school where people started to say, your dad does what? And, you know, I say in the book, I never thought it was really odd or weird. I never really thought about it at all. So when I started to have the reaction of people saying, oh my God, your dad deals with dead bodies with that kind of a tone to it, I thought that was really kind of different because for me, it was very natural. So at that very same time, when I was very, very young, 5 and 6, I personally had a blood disease going on that they didn't understand and was never diagnosed. They thought I was dying of everything under the sun, but never could nail down what it was. But at that point in time, during then, I saw all kinds of spirits in my room. I had nightly visitors all the time. They were on my ceiling, they were in my room. I didn't understand also that my siblings didn't see them or experience them. And they were very benevolent, they were very loving, and they were very much talking to me every night saying I was fine and that I was gonna be okay. And so, yeah, my initial childhood was, I found out later, very different than most.
Well, it is interesting because you were surrounded by spirits, I guess, because, you know, as part of your dad's work. But it doesn't mean everybody is tuned into them, but apparently you found that you were.
Yeah, I think for me, and even amongst the other siblings, by the way, because, you know, back then we all shared like a queen size bed, you know how that was in those days. You'd stuff 2 and 3 kids in a bed, and even the other siblings weren't even aware of anything that I was seeing or experiencing or hearing. And I actually wasn't made privy of that until much later because I just never bothered to ask. I just assumed that they were involved in the same things. And so, yeah, even way, way back at a very young age, I sort of was able to connect with a lot of that. And then, you know, for many years, I let it lie dormant because you didn't want to be that weird kid. You didn't want to be the one in junior high school and you know, stand out as that one. So I let it lie very dormant. But, you know, all through my young adult and adult life, I had hugely intuitive skills. I just chalked it kind of up to intuition, using that word as the umbrella. And then everything came flying back really strong in my late 30s, early 40s.
So you had sort of an initial group of experiences, and then it toned down, or you just stopped sharing about it?
I think because I stopped sharing and stopped paying attention, it just basically took a back seat. And then I sort of reorganized it in my mind and in the way I worked with it as a comfortable word of, oh, I'm just intuitive. And but the actual guidance, the actual seeing spirits, the actual ability to feel energy that isn't in 3D, all of that really did tone down. It never really left, but it toned down so much that I really wasn't aware of it. And then the day that it came flooding back, it was like somebody flipped a light switch on, and it came back so fast and so hard that it was actually quite terrifying. And that was really hard for me because at that point in time, you know, I was a so-called corporate executive, mother of four, living the normal life, and everything came flipping on in an instant. And it was like someone opened up the drain and it was just pouring through. And it was really quite unsettling at that point. So I had to sort of relearn everything in my late, you know, 30s, early 40s.
Well, it's interesting to me the fact that you started your story out with the fact that your father was a mortician, because I think that, you know, that has a lot of influence on who you are and who you became. And it's interesting what's popping in my mind is the artwork of Alex Gray. Are you familiar with Alex Gray?
Oh, yeah. That was one of the first books, and his big, large book of a lot of his works was one of the first things I was presented to when I was in the very initial stages of my journey because I was trying to remember what I know, if you want to put it that way. And I went to see a healer, which I was not even familiar with that they existed at that time. And she presented me the book of Alex Gray, and everything started to click. And I'm like, oh my goodness, that's how I see. That's how my brain sees things. And so that actually was extremely comfortable for me, even though for some other people there it's unsettling artwork. But for me, it was very much a connection of, yep, that's what I see. So I definitely know who that is. Yes.
Right. So me too, actually. I'm a personal friend of Alex's and went to when he used to have his whole artwork display in New York City, but now he has lands upstate. But I found the same thing that you did, Suzanne, is that when I saw his work, it was really exciting to me because I said, wow, he can see what I see, but he's able to translate it into something artwork so other people could experience it. Quite fascinating. But similarly, what reminded me of Alex Gray in your introduction was that he himself worked in a morgue.
And I didn't know that.
In his book, that big book, if you read it towards the beginning. You know, as a young person, that was his job for many years. And it's funny because it led to a similar spiritual opening, I imagine, like what you had as well.
Huh, that's kind of neat. That's neat.
It is. So then, you know, you worked also. And did you do something else professionally other than the work that you do now?
Oh, yeah, goodness. I was a corporate marketing executive for like 30 plus years. And in fact, when I was initially doing the energy work, I was actually a vice president of operations and branding for a pretty big company that did international trade shows. And I was balancing this towards the end of that time period. I was balancing this and that at the same time. And it was a little bipolar in my brain because I would go and work all day long in this very, you know, materialistic, egoic kind of world. Not that it was a bad company. It was a lovely company, but just the world of go, 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 do, 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 have to. And then I would come home at night or on the weekends and go, la, 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 now I'm going to be metaphysical. And, you know, I learned very quickly that that was really difficult to balance those two. And eventually, when I pulled out of the corporate and went into this full time, obviously all of those skills came back in a different way. I don't think we're two different kinds of people. It was just two different sandboxes I was playing in, if you want to use that analogy. But at the beginning, it was a little tough to maintain both of them. Yeah.
Because that's a way for you to help, you know, get your work out in terms of your interests. So I think it's very, very good.
Yeah, it evolved naturally. I mean, I seriously never in my wildest dreams did I ever think I was going to be an energy practitioner. In fact, I didn't even know that they existed. And to be honest, they didn't really exist too much when I was starting this, as far as I was aware of. You know, healers with quotes around that are, you know, in many, many packages. And, you know, shamanism has been around, obviously, but, you know, an actual quantum energy practitioner was not something that was like, you couldn't really Google it. Now you kind of can. But back then it was like, that was kind of an oddity or a rarity.
Well, and wait a minute. You couldn't Google at all. There was no Google, remember? Not that long ago.
That's a good point, right? Oh, Lordy. But yeah, so I mean, mine evolved, and I never thought I was going to actually do it for an actual job or a career choice. I just was so thirsty for the knowledge at the beginning. I was presented Barbara Brennan's very first, you know, her initial book, Hands of Light, which to this day I think still stands the test of time as a real Bible to the industry of, you know, energy and quantum and et cetera. And when I read that book, everything cracked open, and then I could not get enough of reading and learning. And I would read the first couple pages of the book and realize I had already downloaded it. And it just went crazy like that for about 3 years. I burned through any and everything I possibly could without even ever finishing the book. And it just came back more so in downloads than anything. And I just one by one started working on more people because of curiosity. I started out simply with my family, mostly my husband as a guinea pig. And one thing evolved into another, and then it just sort of organically became a career. It was kind of fascinating.
Well, I think, you know, I think it's excellent, and it's a wonderful model Because a lot of people, when they start having feelings that might be considered psychic feelings or, you know, communicating with those who have passed, something like that, they find it very frightening. But it seems mm-hmm. that you evolved beyond, you know, being frightened.
Well, to be perfectly honest, I did have a couple of frightening moments or two. I definitely went through some dark night work. I definitely went through some, especially when it became apparent that the extraterrestrials, et cetera, the star people, those kind of off-planet things, when that started to come forward, that was very unsettling at the beginning. So, I mean, it hasn't always been easy. And so that's, again, why I do the work that I do, to support others that are kind of cracking open to that.
Well, I'm looking at your website, sworthley.com, so people who are interested in this can follow up later, and we will have a link to your website. And the name of your book is An Energy Healer's Book of Dying for Caregivers and Those in Transition. So what is that book about?
The irony, again, it's very similar to the journey. The irony of the book is I did not set out to write a book, as I did not set out to be a healer. I set out to just document my experiences that I was having doing hospice. At a certain point in my energy career, I said to my sister, kind of just on the fly, I said, you know, I think I would like to start working with people that are dying, because, you know, we grew up with that stuff and it feels comfortable. And that very same day, synchronicity, you know, comes in crazy ways. She went off to a pet expo because she's a dog lover, and she found a hospice table that was promoting pet hospice, and she grabbed the card, and within 2 days, I was connected with the hospice workers and being trained to be a vigil end-of-life hospice volunteer. And during the years of me doing that, I started documenting what my experiences were. And it was simply documenting for myself out of curiosity. I would talk to these patients telepathically because they were at, you know, a comatose or non-responsive state usually. And I would just ask them questions and then I would get answers. And that evolved into kind of some materials that I then brought forward in some volunteer meetings, which then kind of on its own became some PowerPoints. And then the PowerPoints became more, you know, solidified up per se. And it turned into sort of like a ebook presentation. And then it evolved into the book. So it's my experiences. It's me learning. It's me understanding what is happening of the death process from a psychic intuitive perspective.
Well, share some of that with us. What is happening?
Well, what's so fascinating to me, you know, I hope that someday our Western world of medicine works more closely with the chakra system, because the chakra system and the auric fields and the meridian lines and all of those wonderful, fascinating things that happen in our human meat body, to me, are educational tools. And the actual chakra system, in my opinion, ignites during the birth process and then de-ignites during the death process. And I write this book in a very methodical way for teaching purposes. Not everybody follows 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 steps, but they will in some shape or form go through those steps, whether they're in order or not, to get to that so-called crossing over point or going to the light point. Because
So wait, let's talk about those steps, because I always feel that there's not enough emphasis on learning about this transition phase. It's almost like you're told one day you'll have to ride a bicycle, but yep. you don't get to try the bicycle beforehand. Wouldn't it be good if you do? And these skills are accessible while you're still conscious and alive. It's great to study it then. And when you get to this point, you go, I know what to do.
Exactly. And that's exactly why I wrote the book, in terms of when we decided to publish it, I actually said, this isn't necessarily just a book about dying. This is a book about living, because technically speaking, our chakras are adjusting and reworking themselves every day per whatever our thought forms and our emotions are. And our chakras are, in my opinion, fuel destination points for our connection to source energy. So if you want to think of God as that so-called source energy, and we're a vehicle of it, much like a car is a vehicle, it needs gas. And the gas is that consciousness connection, and that gas comes in just like at the gas station from this big thing that pours it into that tank, and then that tank is our auric field. So it's very important for us to start to learn about these when we're alive, because our car parts, meaning our body parts, will be running better. Our life will be more synchronistic. We'll be flying down the highway, if you want to use all that symbolism. So these destination points will, if they are clear and running in great order with really high octane gas that's held, have a better synchronistic life, more joy, more passion, more ease and grace. And your death will follow same way, more ease, more grace, etc., because you don't have to do the work to die the same, if you want to put it that way. So clearing these systems during our actual time when we are alive and walking around this planet as a human are really beneficial to us in health and wellness, but they're also beneficial for setting up the death process to go easier, because basically each of those chakras is going to stop bringing in the fuel, if we want to say it that way, learn how to slow that process down and eventually stop that consciousness fuel because we no longer need it for the meat body experience, and then dissipates or dissolves the auric field or the gas tank that's holding that fuel. And each one of those holds a different kind of consciousness. And so, you know, some are about safety and security, some are about emotions and relationships, some are about our ego and our power. And the more that we clear those out in terms of belief systems and bring those to a balanced and joyful way when we're walking around alive and well, the easier they are to dissipate and dissolve during the death process, if that makes some sense.
It does. But I think there's a lot of fear on the part of individuals for even investigating death, because then you have to actually admit that it is going to be a reality for you at some point.
Well, it's kind of exactly right. That's exactly right. But it's kind of funny to me, and always has been again as a child, because to me, it was very obvious from the beginning that we're all going to die. And I've never really quite understood the same level of fear, because I think it was so normal for me. I mean, death for me was like such a normal dinner conversation. And even with pet
death.
Well,
wait, let's just remind if any listeners just joined in, that's because you grew up with a father who was a mortician. So that's
right.
Going to be just the everyday conversation.
Right. And my dad came to the high school, you know, periodically and was a guest speaker in the death class or the religion class. And to me, it weaved into normal life because, you know, running around a funeral home, I saw people dying all the time and I saw families grieving all the time. And I just knew that it was a part of life. And so it has never held that same amount of fear. But I think part of the fear, though, is the unknown. Part of the fear is like, I don't know where I'm going or what's going to happen or what's happening during that death. And this is another reason why I wrote the book from a perspective of what an intuitive or someone with third eye sight can see, because there's wonderful, beautiful things happening during that death process that we aren't necessarily made privy to if we haven't cracked our pineal gland or activated our psychic senses. And to be able to share that hopefully will put a little bit of awe and wonder back into the situation versus just panic and fear. And that's another reason why step by step by step, I actually bullet out what I see as a psychic and what you can do if you can't necessarily see that, but you could hold space for that or, you know, pray about that or intuit or intent that. And so that's kind of why I wrote the book uniquely from the perspective of what does happen from a psychic perspective during death, to kind of ease that fear.
Well, let's talk about a couple of the bullets that people might actually see. And your book is called An Energy Healer's Book of Dying. You have a dragonfly on the front. What's the symbolism of the dragonfly?
Well, first of all, I was thrilled to death when the publisher Finhorn brought that forward, because it's an actual photograph and the woman's photos are phenomenal. I looked on her website, so I was very excited, because that's about transformation. This is about transformation and transition. And I think sometimes it's difficult for me to hear the word, you know, the word death or dead for me was normal. When someone says passed over, that's always been confusing for me. And if someone uses that, great. And if that's your thing, that's fine. But for me, it's always been transition or transmutation. And that is indeed what I see when I look at that actual dragonfly. And there's a really cool side story, if I can divert just for a second. I, ironically, when they had just picked that artwork, like seriously 2 days later, we lost a very dear young man that I had basically raised as another kid on the side. He lived in our home for almost 4 years because he was having a lot of trouble during his high school, you know, junior high school age. And he lived with us for 4 full years. And he was killed on a four-wheeler. And we went to his memorial service, and we were standing at the actual, it was at Fort Snelling in Minnesota here, and we were out in the middle of that vast, vast place, and this gigantic, and I mean gigantic, huge dragonfly came and hovered right over my family, and it just stood there. It just stood there midair, hovered, like frozen in space and time, almost the entire time of the service, and then flew away. And we sat there and we went, wow, thanks, Jason. Nice to see you. Mm-hmm. It was so bizarre and so cool and validating for the, because like I had just approved the cover of the book the day before. So it was really even beautiful sign for me and my family to say, you know, this stuff is real. We can have magic. We can have wonder. We can have awe. So that even validated the cover even more for me.
Very much so. And yeah. One of my books is actually entitled Synchronous Connections, A Personal Journey Through Non-Ordinary Reality.
Oh,
and
great.
That reminds me of that, because it's those synchronous connections. You just got the book cover from the publisher, which was a dragonfly. And your book is about death and transition. And this young man who was an important part in your family passed away, and this dragonfly shows up.
Yeah, you can't make this stuff up.
I know. It's like, what? Anyway, we're going to take a little break right here, Suzanne.
Okay.
And when we come back, we will be continuing our discussion with author Suzanne Worthley, author of the book, An Energy Healer's Book of Dying. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss Sar sarsaparilla, or Smilax officinalis.
Sar sarsaparilla is a tropical plant which grows in South America, Mexico, and Guatemala. Although most Americans are familiar with it as a flavor enhancer for root beer, it has also been used for its beneficial properties for hundreds of years by many different cultures. In Roman times, the young shoots were eaten, and the mature vines were worn as garlands at festivals of Bacchus. According to ancient Roman writings, Sar sarsaparilla originated when the beautiful maiden, Smilax, was turned into a shrub after her love was slighted by the young crocus.
Sar sarsaparilla was brought to Europe in the 16th century by Spanish traders. A French physician, Nicolas Monardus, published a comprehensive account of Sar sarsaparilla as a treatment for syphilis in 1574. During Portuguese military operations in 1812, a British inspector general of hospitals noted its positive effect on syphilis patients. It has also been used in China for treatment of the same condition. Sar sarsaparilla was included in the United States Pharmacopoeia until 1950 as a recommended treatment of secondary syphilis.
Sar sarsaparilla's medicinal action appears to be a result of binding bacterial endotoxins in the gut, thereby decreasing their absorption. This greatly reduces the stress on the liver and is likely responsible for its historic use as a tonic and blood purifier.
In a controlled study of 92 patients published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 1942, a chemically active component of Sar sarsaparilla called sarsaponin greatly improved psoriasis in 62% of the patients and resulted in complete clearance in 18%. Sar sarsaparilla is often recommended by naturopathic physicians for gout, arthritis, and psoriasis. Another folkloric use for Sar sarsaparilla is as a tonic for male sexual potency.
So, if you want a root beer flavored tea with a long history as a healthy tonic, reach for the Sar sarsaparilla in your natural medicine chest.
Wishing you the best. And you can find us at naturalnurse.com. By the way, we have archives of all our radio shows that we do here, and they're also at prn.fm. So if there's something you'd like to share with others and you heard it and they didn't, you can always send a link. In addition, we have online and on-ground classes happening pretty much every day. We have one today on cardiovascular health. We have one in a couple days on Hildegard. Hildegard, a fascinating psychic healer who was a nun, who was an herbalist, who healed with gemstones and energy, which is our topic for today. Today, our guest is Suzanne Worthley, author of the book, An Energy Healer's Book of Dying for Caregivers and Those in Transition. You can find her at S. Worthley, that's SWORTHLEY.com. And of course, we'll have a live link on the show archive after our show today. So thank you so much for joining us today, Suzanne.
Again, I really appreciate the time to talk about this. It's just, I think, a really important subject for those, because we're all going to go through this in some shape or form. So it's great to be able to talk about it out loud.
So I want to ask you a specific thing. I don't know that you have the answer, but I'm interested in your opinion. When someone passes over and reaches the end of their life, as we all do, do you feel that the entire inner spirit stays together along with personality traits and then reincarnates as that being? Or do you feel perhaps the energy just goes into energy land, wherever that is, and then various groupings come together to form new souls?
Yeah, I have drawn it actually for my clients over the years in a visual, if you want to follow this. Like, if I'm down here, I'm a little stick man. This is how I used to draw it on a sheet of paper. And attached to that little stick man is like something that comes out of my heart chakra, like a cord that goes up to and connects to like a sunshine above my head, a circle with a lot of rays coming out of it. I would be down here as an incarnation of Suzanne, stuck with this long tentacle, meaning we call it a silver cord in our work. My silver cord is attached to my higher self or my soul self. When this meat body dies, that silver cord or that essence of Suzanne, it all of a sudden goes sort of back in visualizing now. It goes back to that sunshine, and it is retained as one of those rays of the sunshine. In the nucleus of that sunshine is what I would call my higher self, my inner soul, my oversoul, my soul essence. So there's a shard that becomes Suzanne. There's a piece of that soul that becomes Suzanne. And forever that pieces with attributes, emotions, memories, etc., is stored in that so-called one ray of the sunshine. And this is how a medium like myself can talk to someone who is dead, because we can access that one shard or that piece of that soul essence that had an experience as Suzanne. But that also goes back into that nucleus of that higher self soul. So my belief is when we die, we go back ultimately to that inner space, that in-between lives, that place of what we maybe even want to call heaven, in between lives, and then we readjust and we reevaluate with all kinds of other soul counterparts, benevolence, guardians, etc., to determine what that next incarnation can be. And we may choose or not choose to have shards of maybe essences of any of those rays coming out of that sunshine that my higher self or soul has experienced for karmic return, lessons unfinished, etc., etc. Does that kind of answer what you were asking?
Well, I guess we'll all see.
Yeah, because when I will always retain as a soul experience shards of what Suzanne knows or experiences, but that Suzanne experience then goes into that nucleus of that higher self, so she can be made privy to all kinds of information, much less a collective body of that information. So it all kind of melds and mushes together of sorts, and this actually is attainable when somebody's actually down here on the earth plane, in terms of how really good you get at astral projection and or meditation or out of body experiences. You can go back and investigate your Akashic records, your soul experiences, your past and future lives. And so these are all made accessible. So we don't necessarily reincarnate fully. We reincarnate in shards or pieces of experiences that we want to examine or co-create further of sorts, is my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's a good analysis. I always say every moment in time left unloved must be revisited and healed.
Which is another great way to look at that, and just using different dialogue or narrative. And I think that these are all choices, because the great thing about being a human is that we're co-creators, that we're co-creators with that God source energy, and that we are creating our lives good, bad, and ugly every second of the day. And we have choices. It's called free will. And this is even the choice of how we believe, and the beliefs, the belief systems itself can really limit us in our life and in our death. So in my opinion, again, it's very important for us to open up and clear out anything that does not resonate as a belief any longer for my highest and best good when I am down here living and experiencing, because those beliefs will also create and or limit or alter my death experience. And so it's important, in my opinion, to examine all of that while we're here and present.
Yeah, it's more, the more highly conscious you can be, the more choice you have over your reality in any moment, whether it be in life or in death. And a really wonderful explanation of that I always find in a book that's called The Tibetan Book of the Dead.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, translated from an ancient text that really describes a lot of the things that you do. But in your book, it's more simply explained for someone who's, you know, new to this, and it's really a how-to. Like, let's say you also focus on it in terms of caregivers. Like, yeah, very often people are brought in face-to-face with dying when a loved one of theirs is, you know, in hospice or meeting the end of their time, and then it's all about crying and feeling terrible, and I always feel that's the not a good way to approach it, not even correct.
Oh, and I just had the most amazing experience when this book came out. A friend that I had known years ago had reached out and said, I need your book now because my sister's dying, and I can't do this because I lost my brother 1 year ago in hospice, and she's in hospice, and it's bringing up everything again, and this is horrible, and I need your book now. And I said, well, I'm sorry, it's not out yet. This is like 2-3 weeks before it was supposed to be released. And she said, I know, I've ordered it, but I need it now. And I said, well, I will come and do some hospice with you and try to walk you through the book, you know, do my best to be there for you. And, you know, hopefully you'll get it in hand soon. And true story, she seriously photo screenshot my book, landed in her hand 6-7 hours later. I have no idea how. There's no reason she should have got it. It was pre-pressed almost by 2.5 weeks, and she had it in hand when I walked in the door 2 days later to do hospice. It was,
oh, that's a great story.
Talk about another synchronicity crazy, right? And so the beauty of this is her mother and her father were in the hospice room also, as was her husband. So the four of them, with myself and her dying sister, were going through basically the steps of the book, and I was explaining it in literal terms with their sister right there going through the experience, and it was fascinating. It was beautiful, and it was wonderful, and it was such an opportunity because, sadly, this family has lost 3 out of their 4 children to all kinds of really sad deaths in hospice situations. And this particular hospice gal, because we were doing the work and learning and doing it in love and moving her forward, she died within maybe 4 days of hospice versus the son a year prior had almost 4 weeks. So this expedites the death process with ease and grace. This allows us to work in love versus hanging on fear. You know, when we're a caregiver in that room hanging on fear and I don't want you to go, this confuses the energy of the body and the system. And so when we allow ourselves to work with ease and grace and love and honor, it can expedite and allow that process to go smoother and faster, which ultimately is a beautiful thing for everybody.
Well, let's talk about some of the, let's say, real beginner baby steps that you outline simply in your book for those who are not really well-versed in these kinds of topics. Where do they start?
Well, one of the things that I think is really important with the caregiver thing, I basically in the book outline it step by step, chakra by chakra, because each chakra, like we said prior, holds a different kind of gasoline and or consciousness experience. And one of the hardest ones, I think, for people when it's in transition is the throat chakra, because the throat chakra, oftentimes my loved one dying, if we're talking a methodical death again, because we use it that way to educate, if my loved one is dying and is basically in a non-responsive state, meaning I'm not really responding with my verbal voice very much to my family anymore, those in caregiving sitting around the bed per se,
And all of a sudden I start trying to articulate and I look like I'm struggling to talk. This frustrates the family a lot of times because our normal response is, what are you trying to say, Mom? What do you want, Dad? You know, that kind of a thing. And we get scared and frustrated because we think they're trying to talk. And what I explain in that fifth chakra is we're actually releasing the need to talk. We're actually releasing the actual consciousness of using our actual voice, and we're learning how to go to a higher space of using telepathic talk and being able to connect with heart. And when they're looking to the side of the room and acting like they're reaching out or their eyes are looking at someone, they are seeing someone. We don't necessarily see them if we don't have psychic sight, but they are seeing their loved ones, and that can be exciting for them or confusing for them. So why I write the book so much like a handbook is to give you the indicators of what this person may or may not, but most likely may, be going through in their transition so that we can have some understanding that, oh my goodness, they are seeing someone in the corner. I don't have to do anything about that other than support it. Or, oh my goodness, they are trying to speak, but they're not trying to speak with words that I have to get out of them. I can just allow my heart to listen. And on the book offers, you know, ideas and ways to work differently so that we're not scared or frustrated.
That does seem so common when you're with people who are getting ready to cross to the other side, that they say a name of someone who has passed before them, who they were close with. And, you know, sometimes I don't know the answer to this, but I know in the book in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, they talk about some of those visualizations actually being created by the person's mind, which actually deflect you. Sometimes it's a distraction from moving forward into something that might be a better evolvement to pure light. But if you learn about those things ahead of time, it's interesting.
Yeah, I think two things. I think that we do make them up in our so-called mind, but it may indeed not be the egoic mind as much as the divine mind, meaning I get to a place where my consciousness remembers those that I love, and then my belief system supports, yeah, I would love to have Mom be there when I die. And then Mom, because energy finds like, finds like, finds like, that bat signal, if we want to say that, goes out and finds that essence of Mom, and that creational reality becomes what we would call a reality. So we do have Mom because our heart reaches out for Mom, and our heart expects Mom, and our heart believes Mom, and then Mom becomes that reality. So we do create that, if that makes some sense. I mean, Mom in essence is an omnipresence if she's already gone. If she's already transitioned, she's an omnipresence. And when my wanting or my heart space calls out to her, she becomes that connection reality. So indeed, we create our death along our belief systems. And this is why it's so important for us to clear out anything that's negative, because if there's something negative in my way, like one of the case studies, in fact, really held this one young man back from moving forward, like you're saying, to a greater light experience, because this negative belief system of, oh my God, I'm going to go to hell, really stood in his way. And once we release that from an energetic standpoint, he died quite peacefully within hours. So it can be a detriment or it can be a help, these belief systems.
That's true. It's a constant state of balance. Well, we're going to take another little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with author Suzanne Worsley, author of the book, An Energy Healer's Book of Dying. You can find out more at sworsley.com. Or just come back and listen to our archive show. We'll have a direct link. And I imagine you can also find her book everywhere, An Energy Healer's Book of Dying. Right now, we're going to hear some promos so that you can know more about what's going on at Progressive Radio Network, your connection to the voice of progressive knowledge in today's world. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Stay up to date with PRN for the latest on the coronavirus. Learn ways to stay spiritually vibrant and physically strong on PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. I am Karen Hartglass, the host of It's All About Food. Join me every Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time, or catch all of my shows in the archives. You can find my archived programs at the Progressive Radio Network website, or you can call my personal archive phone number to hear the most recent 5 episodes of It's All About Food. Here's the number: 1-701-719-0885. Here it is again: 1-701-719-0885. Learn about how we can solve many of the world's problems today and do it deliciously here on It's All About Food.
I'm Dr. Peter Bregan, a psychiatrist who doesn't believe in psychiatric drugs and psychiatric diagnoses. I think they do more harm than good. And emotional problems don't come from our genetics or our chemistry. Come from our fears and our uncertainties about engaging life in a loving, rational way. Every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. New York time, I interview fellow pioneers in the human sciences. Call in to ask questions or share your views on 888-874-4888. To talk with me and my guests live on the air on Wednesdays, 4 to 5 p.m. New York time. Join me on PRN.FM.
Progressive Radio Network. The Thinking Person Station.
Welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we love to hear from you. Go to naturalnurse.com. You can sign up for our newsletter. All we ask for is your email, nothing else. No questions asked. No name, no phone number. You can not get the newsletter anytime you want, but a lot of people get it. We have over thousands of people on our newsletter list. And then we have a Facebook page at facebook.com/naturalnurse. And you can also like that page and get all our information there as well. And if you go to naturalnurse.com, under calendar is where we have all the classes listed. And you can join in with on-ground classes where we go out and gather wild edible and medicinal plants. It's a real good thing to know right now. And in fact, we're giving that course virtually and free through a local library, the Brentwood Public Library. And that's coming up soon as well. So all kinds of things to join in with us, as well as CE credits for nurses and licensed massage therapists, acupuncturists, registered dietitians. So just join us at naturalnurse.com in any capacity that you'd like. Today we have as our guest author Suzanne Worsley, author of An Energy Healer's Book of Dying. She is sharing so much interesting information from her book. And thank you so much for being our guest today, Suzanne.
Again, I appreciate the opportunity.
Now, let's talk about how someone could prepare while they're still alive, you know, to come to terms with that moment, and that therefore they can be a better person as a caregiver and have an easier passing when it's their time.
That's an awesome thing to talk about, because this kind of directly relates to my career also as an energy practitioner. This, again, anchors in belief systems. And one of the hardest chakras for people to let go of is that first and second chakra. These relate to our sense of being safe. They relate to materialism. They relate to fight or flight. They relate to emotions and passions and relationships with others. And all of those things can get very, very messy during the death process. We see oftentimes when people are starting to die, I get scared. What's going to happen to my stuff? How is my family going to be okay without me? And those in transitional caregiving are saying things like, you know, I don't know what to tell him or her about their stuff. I don't know what to say about relationships. And these are all things that I believe as a practitioner, we could be doing work on every day of our lives to get rid of the fear cords attached to things like my house, my stuff, my money, my 401k, because these are fear-based belief systems that we cultivate and grow throughout our life. But the reality is that initial root chakra is designed for me to be safe as a human meat body, just because I'm connected to the earth, just because I'm here, just because I'm present, not because I have money, a house, or stuff. And when we reorganize those belief systems and understand my connection as being a human here is about being here as a planetary existence, connecting to Gaia and Mother Earth, being part of earth, wind, water, fire, and its plant and animal kingdom, etc. This is important things that we can do now. And then when that chakra releases the consciousness of being attached to the earth, it goes very smoothly. But if that belief system is tied up with things like, I don't know what to do with my money in my house, when I'm transitioning, I'm scared about those materialistic things. So we can do that work while we're alive. And the same thing happens with relationships. I do not and never have had control over if someone loves me, how they love me, how they don't love me, etc. I can only do my best to give unconditional love. And we, sadly human, conditionalize our love in ways of I love you if you, when you, because you, or I'm not lovable because you didn't, and on these cords are created between love aspects that then can be very difficult to also release during not only living, but dying. So these are things as a practitioner that I try to help my people understand as clients, do this work now. Do this work now because you want to be safe in this body. You want to be connected to the earth plane, because when it's time to leave it, your body will understand that because it's a consciousness connection. So these are all things that we can do. So you can literally take the book of the Energy Healer's Book of Dying and work with it at any form or any stage, or any being can look at this and say, oh, I can do this work now. I don't have to be caregiving someone that's dying or being in the death process myself. I can do this conscious work now and have a healthier life and an easier death.
Now, what's the link to religion, would you say? Is this information different for different people of different faiths, or different, let's say, atheists who don't believe in any kind of higher energy field or heaven or hell or any of those things?
Right. I love when I do, like, for example, paranormal events or something, because I'll inevitably get the so-called, you know, one that doesn't believe anything, and I'm going to bust you and make it not real. And I just bring it down to energy. When I'm not here to tell anyone how to believe, because that's not my job. It's all of our own jobs to believe in what our source energy looks like. But we don't have to put a dogma or a religious aspect or spin on spirit. We can bring it down to simply energy. And when we start to play with our own energy body, we all can learn things about energy, because we're an energetic being. We are an electromagnetic being that is experiencing it in meat and bone. And we can learn all kinds of things and open and expand our minds and our thoughts on spirit and spirituality, not dogma and religion, if we just bring it down to energy. And those are all learnable. And I think that that's why this kind of like stays right in the middle. It doesn't, you don't have to attach religion. That said, if you have a dogmatic belief system that is religious, great, add that in, add it on top. Use the words prayer differently. Use the words support systems differently. So this book can align to anybody's belief system. It doesn't say you have to have this one or that one.
Now, one thing that I have found is that those people who have been investigating these kinds of esoteric beliefs throughout their life, regardless if they're Hindu, Buddhist, Jewish, Christian, Shinto, or any other religion, because I've had experiences with all of those, I find that those people do seem to have a more peaceful passing. And even when we're in the depth of going through it at that time, there's really less resistance, mm-hmm. less fear, less pain, because mm-hmm. very often that fear translates into pain. So I would say, in my more than, you know, I'll be 70 years old, so I've been doing this a very long time, just like you, since we're children. I really have found that those who do wake up to the kinds of teachings you're sharing in your book, An Energy Healer's Book of Dying, have an easier time, both in life and when it's time to leave.
fully. And that's exactly why I do the work that I do as a practitioner, because this isn't always about death, because technically speaking, we're dying every day. We have death every day in a multitude of ways. And it isn't just about the meat body. It's about everything. We die and live and die and live every single day. So when we can start to understand there's only two kinds of fuel for this vehicle and this experience, there's only two vibrational frequencies, one of love and one of fear. And we choose throughout our day which fuel we are watching our eyeballs through, allowing our body to experience through, choosing to believe through, et cetera, on an ongoing basis. So it is about love or it is about fear. And I can't honestly say that, you know, oh, Suzanne's so good at this stuff that she lives in one, you know, only one fuel of love all day, because that isn't true. I'm still a human meat body that gets affected by my family, my friends, the collective consciousness, the reality, et cetera. But I work extremely hard and diligently to constantly paradigm shift back into, how do you want to look at this? How do you want to co-create this? How do you want to move this into a love state versus staying in a fear state? And that's why this meat body is so awesome, because the meat body communicates with us. It dis-eases according to that fear level. And then that dis-ease eventually chooses to turn into disease. And this is how we die. So again, it comes back to live as if you're dying, because you're dying as if you're living.
Well, we're going to bring this conversation to a close. It was very, very fascinating, Suzanne. Just shout out how people can find you and your book, An Energy Healer's Book of Dying.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Anything and everything, you can just basically, like we said, Google's a wonderful thing these days. You can Google the actual title, An Energy Healer's Book of Dying. You can Google myself. My name, Suzanne Worthley. You can go directly to my website, sworthley.com, through Amazon, through Barnes & Noble, through the actual publisher, et cetera. It's pretty darn easy to find. But my website drives you to a lot of other really great information as far as ascension and healing and everything. That's all free and available. So I do encourage people to check out the book through the website if they choose to.
Well, thank you so much, Suzanne. And thank you, listeners, for joining us once again. And we hope that you are hunkering down and happy. We have a lot of people joining with us to do a private consultation on how you can use natural remedies and herbs for yourself, for your loved ones, for your immune support, and for feeling really well. And until next time, and on behalf of myself, Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse at naturalnurse.com, and Dr. Eugene Zamperone, Dr. Z, we hope that you stay healthy.